We roll on, we roll forward. It's time for more 40 and 30. It's time for more illustrious guests. It's time for an excellent combination today. We have an excellent combination. I'll say this, one of my favorite people, full stop, and an absolute top tier for me person to talk about baseball with, and has been for, I don't even want to say how many years it's been, because we're both so young when it started.
We were kids. Dreamers then, triers then.
Big hearts then. One of my favorite people and one of my favorite players. We're talking about Chris Bassett today. The pitcher work has begun. The let's look into the rotation guys work has begun. And it is a lot more work than just guessing at what guys are doing at the plate. I end up overstudying for the pitchers. And luckily, I have with me today somebody that can explain the art a little bit, somebody that understands the mindset, somebody that's been through the rigors, has towed the rubber, and somebody whose work you have fallen in love with for many, many years. One of my favorite people, period, and just an excellent baseball mind that I always love chopping it up with, my old friend and your old friend. It's Jonah Bierenbaum from The Score. Jonah, how are you?
I'm doing great, buddy. Thanks so much for having me. Thank you for that incredible introduction. Illustrious is a very generous word to describe me with, but I'm very grateful to you for that, sir. And it's great to connect. We haven't talked ball in a veritable eternity. It's been way too long.
I want to say it's been like a year and a half plus.
Yeah.
Probably. Maybe two.
I think it was late 2021 when we last talked ball in an official capacity.
That's
obviously
crazy.
You know, there's seldom a day that goes by that we're not texting each other about this great game of ours, but in an official capacity, I think it was late 2021.
You're in the meltdown circle. I have people that I do and don't melt down in front of. You are in the circle. You are in the one thing goes wrong and I'm like, I quit. I can't do,
man,
this.
It's pretty alarming how firmly entrenched in so many different people's meltdown circles I am. Like Blake's, like I'm Blake's meltdown consigliere. I'm in your meltdown circle. I'm just, if things are going wrong, you got to call up JB, man.
You understand that a meltdown doesn't, it's not an indicator of my overall feelings. It's my in the moment,
it's momentary
snap reaction. Yeah,
it's momentary. Absolutely. It's not predictive. I get it. You're preaching to the choir, buddy.
Absolutely right. When I threw this to you about the 40 and 30 project and said you have a veritable pick of 40 men to choose from, you landed on Chris Bassett. And I love Chris Bassett. I'm going to try to present the whole case here, but cards on the table, absolutely fell in love with Chris Bassett. This offseason, only more in love with Chris Bassett. Why did you pick Chris Bassett as your guy to sort of microscope here today?
Yeah, he's the man. First and foremost, Chris Bassett is just an incredible anomaly stylistically. Like, there are so few pitchers in the post-analytics landscape who pitch like him. When you think of effective starters with a repertoire 8 pitches deep in recent baseball history, there's maybe a handful that come to mind, the most prominent among them arguably being Yu Darvish. Yeah. And of course, an important distinction between Yu Darvish and Chris Bassett is that Yu Darvish can hit 99 miles an hour with his four-seamer when he wants to. Chris Bassett obviously doesn't have that kind of velocity. So in the modern MLB landscape, Bassett is almost one of a kind. And the fact that he can be effective with an 8-pitch arsenal anchored by a sinker that sits at 92 speaks to A, how effective that sinker is at inducing bad contact, but B, how well Bassett understands how to attack hitters, how well he understands himself, his strengths and weaknesses. And I guess if I can borrow a tired platitude, Bassett really knows how to pitch. And don't get me wrong, it's electrifying watching guys like Gerrit Cole overpower hitters. I find it extremely entertaining watching Chris Bassett frustrate and flummox. And then I guess the second part of my response is that I chose Bassett because I love what he represents for this Blue Jays team, and that is a fulsome commitment to winning the World Series and, like, ASAP. They didn't give 34-year-old Chris Bassett $63 million just to sneak into the wildcard round. They gave him that money to create a rotation good and deep enough to win 90-plus games and an AL East title, and potentially for Chris Bassett to make some postseason starts, which, I mean, given the trajectory of Alek Manoah, now seems extremely plausible that Bassett would be in a playoff rotation for this team. So I think Bassett, perhaps more than any other player on this roster, is a signifier of the Blue Jays' seriousness of purpose, their sense of urgency. And look, the Hyunjin Ryu deal, the George Springer deal, the Kevin Gausman deal, those were foundational acquisitions that helped turn the Blue Jays into a playoff team. The Bassett deal was done to turn them into champions. And I mean, how could you not have fallen in love with him last year? I certainly did. And I'm excited to talk about him with you today.
Man, inspiring conversation there. Really, really run through a wall type stuff. I agree with it totally. He does seem so singular, and like he has adjusted, I think, my expectation, but my understanding of like what I'm looking for, especially in spring. Like I've had this epiphany from him this year in spring, is like anybody throwing harder than 95 that isn't competing for a job in spring is a rube. Like you are an idiot. If you're not just out there seeing how many pitches you can throw and then getting your work in and going home, you've been had by the baseball structure. And you're totally right. I mean, we've had a long road of analytical thinking, and guys go to Harvard for 7 years and come out and go, velocity is good. And we go, wow, where were these eggheads for years? It's really quite something. When he is a guy that, you know, the age old pitcher versus thrower sort of conversation, it's the art of pitching. It is the mental aspect of pitching. It is, guys are going to catch up with 99. Guys are going to catch up with 102. Guys are not going to catch up with 92 if they think it's coming in at 76. He's just really got that ability to throw it all over, up, down, left, right, moving both ways, moving up, vertical. There's some interesting stuff we'll get into about sort of the change in approach he makes halfway through this year to lefties. Let's get into some of the finer details. As you mentioned, 35 years old, just turned 35 in February. 3 years, $63 million he signed December 16th, 2022. That's 21 per, quick math, through 2025. Spoiler alert, everything ends in 2025.
Oh, yeah.
2025. Let's not think about the 36-year-old George Springer as the only player on the 2026 roster. That's 8 years of service time. Quick transaction history was 1 year in Chicago and was traded with Marcus Semien to Oakland for the Shark and Gabriel Ulloa. And then 6 years in Oakland, he was traded in 2022 after a very good year to the Mets. Your early thoughts and feelings, we know that famously he was drilled by that line drive. Your early thoughts and feelings on maybe the Bassett signing, you did a great job of sort of contextualizing in the bigger picture. When they added him off the gate, was that something that you were pretty excited about right away?
It was, yeah. It was precisely what the Jays needed. They needed to add more length to their rotation that was really good, but really top heavy. And it was, I believe, exactly the kind of move that teams with World Series ambitions make. You know, you raise the floor of the back end of the rotation. I don't think that, you know, even Ross Atkins anticipated that Chris Bassett would be the monster that he was in 2023. But I was on board from the get-go. It was exactly the kind of sort of calculated risk that this team looking to make the jump from contender to World Series favorite needed to make. And, you know, it was one of, in my opinion, Ross Atkins' victories in free agency. And he's had a lot of them, but certainly the Bassett one ranks up there among his finest.
Those victories in 2023 counted, to start with, 200 innings. They don't make them like they used to. 200 innings felt legitimately monumental when he hit that last year, which is like,
who does that?
What kind of man? Only one after my very heart. 3.6 ERA. That's a 4.28 FIP, if you believe in that sort of thing. 22.5 K rate, 7.1 walk rate, good for 2.5 wins or 2.6 wins, depending on where you check it. Most places seem to agree, though, about 2.5 wins over 200 innings. That'll do nicely at a glance. Overarching, I know you mentioned it was a win in free agency. Your general feelings on Bassett's 2023?
It was outstanding. And if you eliminate sort of his miserable Blue Jays debut, his ERA for the season, so over a sample of more than 196 innings, shrinks all the way to 3.25, which is just absolutely incredible, and also a reflection of just how nightmarish his first start in a Blue Jays uniform was. But I mean, you know, I never in my wildest dreams imagined that a 34-year-old Chris Bassitt would be one of a handful of guys in the league throwing 200 innings after never before hitting that benchmark in his career. But, you know, not just throwing 200 innings like someone would have in 1987, but 200 very, very high quality innings. I mean, he led the American League in wins, which obviously wins, you know, we've moved past that mode of analysis, but that's still reflective of just how effective he was almost every time out in 2023. He was, I believe, tied for third in the majors in quality starts. You really just can't say enough about how impressive he was and really how critical he was to a Jays team that became extremely and unexpectedly pitching oriented in 2023. And look, I mean, that kind of seems to be where their identity is currently heading into 2024. They're going to need Chris Bassitt to continue to be, you know, a volume monster and effective if they're going to be competing for anything this season. But, you know, if 2023 ends up being the high watermark of his tenure in Toronto, I think everyone would be thrilled. And certainly, you know, it exceeded all of my expectations.
You mentioned off the hop, the eight pitches. I'm just going to quickly run through the pitch mix here. Threw 40% sinker last year. It sat 92 and topped at 95, plus 27 run value. That is bananas for a guy who isn't throwing hard. And absolutely pounded the zone with it, threw it for a strike a ton. Then 15% cutter, that is very much segmented towards lefties. Then they touched it quite a bit, minus six run value on that. Tried to get it up and away to steal strikes, did not work very often. A 12% curveball, which sat 71. It was a plus two run value. You threw that low into the edges, very loopy, lots more vertical drop than your average curveball. 9% on his four seamer, that was also minus nine. He threw that up, it got hit quite a bit as well. 9% sweeper, he threw that low and away to righties, minus one run value. 6% changeup, plus three run value, that had a lot of arm side. 4% slider, down and away to righties, minus two run value. 3% splitter, minus four down the way to lefties. A ton of the individual pitches are minus run value, and of course these things are not hard and fast. Just sort of interesting thing that the sinker was so valuable that he was able to run it off all kinds of different stuff and really build around how effective that was for a guy that throws such a mix, especially against righties. He threw it basically 50% of the time and cut down a lot of the splitter, a lot of the slider, got away from that. And then against lefties, he makes a big change halfway through the year and basically abandons his fastball, abandons sweeper, basically abandons anything left-right for north-south because lefties teed off on him. When you look at the pitch mix, when you look at, I mean, the run values, they're not generally all that sticky except for some individual dominant pitches. When you look at the pitch mix, how does that fill in the picture for you for Chris Bassitt?
Well, one thing I'll say off the top is that it's utterly remarkable that his sinker was tied for the third most valuable pitch in the game last year in terms of run value, behind only Gerrit Cole's four-seamer and Logan Webb's changeup. But it's doubly impressive because a sinker is a pitch that has pretty pronounced splits in that opposite-handed hitters hit sinkers extremely well. So it's shocking that, you know, his primary pitch, that sinker, would rank so highly given that it's pretty vulnerable when he throws it to lefties. So it's a testament to what a weapon it is. And it really has always been extremely effective. Like, that has been his bread and butter for as long as he's been around in the big leagues. Chris Bassitt I think it's a little bit unfair to refer to him as like a kitchen sinker because he can still run it up to 95. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he touched 96 last year. He does have velocity. I just think that he recognizes that, you know, when you're sitting at 92 and when your four seam doesn't have great shape to it, you know, you need a vast assortment to mix and match, to keep guys off balance, to keep them guessing. And, you know, he really understands how to utilize it. Like you said, he's really apt at making adjustments, whether that's in season, whether that's in game. And if something isn't working, he'll scrap it. He'll go to something else. Like, he has, I think, a really good understanding of what he's doing out there, what's working, what isn't, what hitter strengths and weaknesses are. And, you know, having that deep mix is You know, it's part and part. It's who he is. You know what I mean? Like that's how he's been successful, is by, you know, throwing a lot of different looks at guys. Not necessarily, you know, always looking to get swing and miss, or always looking to get, you know, weak contact with certain pitches. Certain pitches are there to set up other ones, but, you know, this is the recipe that has made him so successful throughout his career, is throwing this deep assortment of pitches. And, that's how he has managed, you know, every season since he's had Tommy John surgery in 2016 to put up an ERA of, you know, 3.8 or lower. Like, this is how he has success, and it works.
Yeah,
for him.
I absolutely agree. I think it's, I love the way you put that. Sort of, he seems to exude just like knowledge of himself, in that I sort of trust that the health is a little stickier than it would be normally. Sometimes we sort of view health as randomness, but you really do get the sense from him, and I think Gausman as well. You can probably throw the rest of the veterans in the rotation here, is they're very aware of their bodies and their limitations, and you don't see him, like, he can throw 95. He doesn't need to throw 95 every pitch, not only just to be effective, but because he wants to throw 200 innings, because he wants to be healthy in October, because he wants there to be the 30,000 foot view of, I need to be able to do this all year long and do it really effectively. And I think that is something where, you know, it's been a pretty common conversation piece around the team this year about, they got really healthy with pitcher luck last year, and they did get above average health. They did not go through nine starters for an extended period, other than Manoah, you know, not being able to pitch. Like, Ryu jumped back into the rotation, like miraculously. They didn't have to go very deep into the reserves, and that isn't always going to be repeatable. But you do sort of believe with someone like Bassett that he's going to know when to take the foot off the gas a little bit, when to bring himself out of a game if he has to. He's not so proud that he has to do that. Even saw last year, something that I loved is, like, if the tempo wasn't right, he would just take the ball on the pitch clock and just go, you know what, I can sacrifice one pitch. It's not the end of my world to have one extra ball called against me. I thought that was a nice sign of the cunning and the level of thought that he's putting into what he's doing out there, and sort of exuding control, I think, is sort of the way that comes across to me.
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking, I was struck by the fact that he was, you know, among the league leaders in pitch clock violations last year with 11. But to your point, I feel like a lot of those were strategic, and, you know, that was a calculated risk that he took. He's like, I'll add a ball to the count so that I'm, you know, working on my tempo. But yeah, it's funny. I was thinking of ways to characterize the confidence that I feel when Chris Bassett takes the mound. And I was like, it's like a warm hug. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, you know that he's going to compete at an extremely high level. And if something isn't working, you have confidence he's going to make the adjustment and try to do something differently. He's a pitcher, you know, who just, every time he takes the ball, you feel pretty good about your chances to get a competitive outing and to win a ball game, which is, I mean, really, you know, arguably the highest praise you can give a pitcher.
Yeah, absolutely right. We'll take a look at that attack plan here. He would lean sinker cutter in batter's counts. There is a little bit of, if you can get ahead of him, you can sort of, I'm not say sit sinker, because it's a pitch that he was very effective when. The real thing that I love looking at his pitch mix is, if he is ahead of you in the count, there is no telling what's coming next. It is like, he'll throw anything once he's ahead in the count. Five different pitches he threw at least 12% of the time when ahead in the count. That's wild. He's a strike thrower, 3% above league average in strikes thrown, and 3.5% above league average in pitching on the edge. The whiff rates spike on the sweeper and the curveball. Put away pitch was the sweeper for the most part last year, and thought this was neat. Speaking of run value, in 2021, he had 7 pitches with positive run value. Just like everything working and then some. To poke at the circles, they are red on the hard hit percentage, the exit velo, and the fastball value, which counts as sinker, of course. Blue on whiff rate and chase rate and fastball velo, and middle ground on strikeout rate, ground ball rate, and the expected stats. I think that lines up with the eye test, right? The it's not about whiff and chase with him for the most part. It's not about velo. It's about soft contact. It's about using that sinker to get outs, to get that ball hit into the hands of the waiting outfielders, who do so easily run it down and make those plays. And then everything else is just sort of middle of the road. He's an average strikeout guy, an average ground ball guy. Everything else is expected. I think all those red circles line up to sort of what you would see if you were just colloquially watching the game.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't get to 200 innings really in today's environment by, you know, throwing 120 pitches over five innings because you're racking up strikeouts. I mean, I guess you do if you're Gerrit Cole, but he's also maybe not going to pitch this season. Now. So, yeah, you simply hate to see it. No, absolutely. That, I mean, I think that the Savant sliders very much align with, you know, what is observable when he pitches. He's keeping guys off balance. He's keeping guys guessing. And he's inducing a lot of weak contact. And to your point about how once he gets ahead in the count, he's utterly unpredictable. Bassett had one of the highest rates last year of looking strikeouts because guys just absolutely don't know what to expect when they're down in the count. He's just got so many different weapons that he can throw at you, whether you're right-handed or whether you're left-handed, which is really fun for Blue Jays fans and really not fun for opposing hitters. And meanwhile, he's also tied for fifth in the majors last year in three pitch strikeouts, which was fascinating to me because he's not, you know, a monster from a strikeout perspective. But I think the depth of his mix makes it so difficult that if you're down 0-2, you're almost giving up. You're just hoping that he wastes one and spoils it and you can get back into the count after a non-competitive 0-2 pitch because you're really up there guessing. And, you know, that's how he has success, is just by keeping guys in their heads, not knowing what's
coming. That's a great find, because he is not, when I think three-pitch strikeout, I think, you know, the good morning, good afternoon, good night. I think Romano, right? Yeah. Where it's like 100, 100, 100, and then slider. And you're just like, oh, why did I come on?
Or slider, yes. 100, given how he's trending.
Yeah. You're like, why did I even come out here today? Yeah, I think that's absolutely, that's a great pull. I love that. It wasn't all wine and roses. Lefties was a sore spot. FIP of over five. The home run rate, two home runs per nine. 21 home runs given up to lefties last year. They had an 841 OPS, and they ate up stuff on the inner half. The inner half is where all the damage is done here. I think that's a little bit of, you look at the heat maps, trying to get that cutter. Either he tries to get it inside and it doesn't go in enough, or he tries to steal it on the other side and it comes across right a bit. Quite a bit, as you mentioned, the four home runs on opening day. There is a pretty substantial change in his pitch mix in the second half of the year. To left-handed pitching especially, he doesn't throw sweeper basically at all to them anymore, and he abandons the slider a lot more, and he abandons the splitter after sort of building it up in the beginning of the year. He sort of lets go of the horizontal movement. Does that feel sticky to you, the lefty split there? I know these splits, we're talking about percentages of percentages.
Look, I mean, it would make sense that Chris Bassett has pronounced splits, right? He's a sinker guy. He's a sinker, you know, slider guy. Although, yeah, maybe that's not fair to say. Anyways, the point is his primary weapon is a sinker, and that's a pitch that is very vulnerable to get hit hard by opposite-handed hitters. And to your point, I think one of the reasons that his splits were particularly bad last year was that the cutter abandoned him, right? He lost the shape for it. He definitely lost the command for it. Looking at his heat maps, yes, whether he was trying to backdoor it or whether he was trying to go in on righty's hands, it was just leaking out of the plate. And I think that was typified, you know, with the first batter he faced last year, Brendan Donovan taking him for a home run on an 89-mile-an-hour cutter that was right at the belt, right down the middle. So that's something that he's going to have to rediscover this year, especially given the fact that, you know, he's already in the decline phase when it comes to velocity. He lost about a full tick last year. If that trend continues, it's even more imperative that he, you know, find that shape, find that movement on his cutter, because that's such a critical piece for him for neutralizing left-handed hitters. It just wasn't there that year. Last year got slugged to the tune of a 6.15 slugging, which is just outrageous. And you know, it's tough because, you know, of all the weapons he has, you know, I would say the changeup and the split finger are tertiary ones. And those are traditionally the best weapons for neutralizing left-handed hitters if you're a right-handed pitcher. So, you know, rediscovering that cutter is going to be big for him. And if he doesn't, you know, it's quite likely that he could be vulnerable to lefties again.
Yeah, I think it's, you sort of see it in the usage rates, and you sort of nailed it there, is like, if the sinker isn't able to be the weapon because of the sort of the way that it shapes in there, and he was almost like he was searching for what that other thing was going to be against left-handed batters, and he didn't really find it, but he did come on strong in the second half. Yeah, right, under 3.289 in the second half, and 4.419 in the beginning of the season. You do point out quite well, though, you can take away a lot of runs in the first start, and the 4.19 seems a lot more reasonable. Other than that, model of consistency, 7 seasons with an ERA under 4, 33 innings every month last year, like clockwork. And he got better every single month, July, August, September, October. It went and went and went because they had him on the innings diet. 4 games he pitched into the 8 scoreless, including a masterpiece, the complete game shutout against Atlanta. 2 games he had 12 strikeouts, and he pitched into the 7th inning 14 times after a team that there was that funny thing about how they hadn't had a complete game shutout in so long. He was destined to be the guy that sort of broke through and was like, I'm going to be the guy who eats all the innings this year. I thought it was, you could really feel how much it was needed when he had that masterpiece against Atlanta.
So I was at that masterpiece against Atlanta, which must have ended in like an hour and 37 minutes. But I was there with my old man, and I just remember I felt so bad for Atlanta fans because they had to watch an inferior pitcher in the form of Spencer Strider take the mound for their team. And I was just, you know, I was just despondent. I was like, if only these Atlanta fans could have a pitcher like Chris Bassitt toeing the slab for them. They have to watch this Spencer Strider guy. You know, I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
Some fans need it to be simple, right? They need to be spoon-fed. They don't. It can't be too difficult for them to, why isn't it working? Why isn't he just throwing as hard as he possibly can? Just throw 2 pitches and throw them very well.
And I got to say, I mean, first of all, to your point, he had a pretty good outing most times he went out there last year, but I was also at that game when he took on the Mets in Queens in early June, and he struck out 8 over 7 2/3. And I believe he promptly got on a plane to go be with his wife who was in labor.
Yes.
And I just, it made the trip because that was the Friday night. We had just gotten in into New York, and Chris Bassitt, after like a 90-minute rain delay, comes out, his wife's delivering a baby while he's out there. He's still got time to strike out 8 over 7 2/3 shutouts. Jays win 3-0. So I got to say, I have a very deep personal affinity for Chris Bassitt because I feel like I was privy to some of his finer outings last year. But man, there were certainly a lot to choose from.
Certain he would say the same given the opportunity, for sure. That's a lot last year. Nothing else really stands out. The batted ball stuff is all in line with who he is and what the league sort of is. The MLB average in ground ball rate, induced a career high in fly ball rate, but not spiking in any way. And he's a quirky guy. We look at the projections. I don't know about you. I am somebody that I either ignore them or I amalgamate them. There's the only 2 ways I sort of deal with these. Your low end Zips has him at 384 with a 411 FIP. Your least believer is the bat with a 433 ERA. The home run rate seems to be the real variable here in how much success they seem to think he would have. 1.32 on the high end from the bat, 110 from Zips. All of them sort of agreeing, though, the walk rate is either low 7 to mid 6 or a strikeout rate basically in line with what it was last year. When you look at those projections, 384, fairly close to who he just was, although there's a little bit more of the non-believer. I think there's more ERAs in the 4 than there are in the high 3s. How does that you look at that and it makes sort of total sense in terms of the peripherals?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I think projection models are always going to discount a pitcher like Bassitt who doesn't have monstrous strikeout numbers. And, you know, obviously age is a factor too into these computations. But look, he's demonstrated an ability to consistently outperform projections, to outperform his peripherals. I don't think that these models have the ability to account for the fact that he has a clear talent for inducing weak contact, right? You know, for a pitcher who puts up the ERAs that he does, you would think that his strikeout rate would be higher, but it isn't. He has success by inducing weak contact. That's not necessarily reflected in all of these projection models. So yeah, I mean, it all makes sense to me, but again, I am myself expecting that, you know, he could easily outperform, you know, any of these numbers. And I would be surprised if he finished with an ERA in the 4s, especially, you know, I think that the home run rate that it's projecting it would be quite high. I mean, it would be tied for the highest since he underwent Tommy John in 2016. And throughout his career, you know, he's been really good at suppressing home runs, keeping the ball in the yard, and home run to fly ball rate does tend to fluctuate year over year. Last year was pretty high. Wouldn't be surprising if it came back down this year. So, everything that we see there makes sense. But again, he's a guy who has, throughout his career, outperformed the projections. So, you know, that's when I'm expecting to continue.
Discourse. I mean, you have a finger on the pulse of the fan base. I think people love Chris Bassett. I don't see.
There was.
I know game one. A lot of us were like, he doesn't seem to understand the pitch comp, and not the most auspicious of starts with the extreme home runs and the many, many runs over very few innings. That it was like, I can't believe this is the signing. But 200 innings, that shutout, how deep he went into games so often, and the calming, like, seen it all, done it all, been there, done that, nothing gets him too excited vibe, I thought really meshed nicely with a fan base that was how we say, on edge quite a bit over the last year. I think Bassett is a very needed salve for this fan base in terms of everything is going to be fine. Chris Bassett's got it tonight. You feel that way?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I maintain it's like a warm hug when he's out there, and he has a very nice counterbalance, I think, vibe wise to, you know, certainly what Alek Manoah brought out last year when he was, you know, going through his struggles, and certainly when Jose Berríos was out there too, because coming off of his 2022 season, I think fans were very anxious about what Jose Berríos was going to deliver last year. But yeah, pretty much once Chris Bassett put his ugly debut behind him, he was sort of the cure for what ailed Jays fans if they were, you know, struggling with anxiety. Every 5 days, like, you knew that you were going to get a competitive start, and he established that pretty quickly. I mean, by the middle of May, his ERA was, you know, almost down to 3 on the dot. And, you know, by season's end, it was only a tick over 3.5. So he just kept executing. He kept delivering. And over time, fans developed a high level of trust in him. And so did John Schneider. You know, like, it's not easy for a 34-year-old starter to get an opportunity to pitch into the seventh or eighth inning consistently, especially when you don't have overpowering stuff. But Chris Bassett, through his consistent excellence, I don't think that it's an overstatement to use that word to describe his performance last year, through his consistent excellence, earned that trust from John Schneider, was given the opportunity to pitch deeper than you would expect most starters to go in today's climate. And more often than not, he rewarded John Schneider for that faith in him. Again, you know, I feel like I'm beating a dead horse at this point. There's nothing not to love about him. And, you know, the Hound as a nickname, I mean, that's 80 grade. That's elite.
Perfect. Force a comp time. You can take this however you want. Is there anybody out there that you think reminds you either tonally, style-wise, the numbers, the collection of pitches, the way he acts, the can you force a comp onto who Chris Bassett reminds you of?
Yeah, and I don't know how this one is going to land, but I'm going to throw out Marcus Stroman.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, that was kind of the reaction that I was anticipating, but bear with me for a second. Sure. Let me explain. You know, they're both sinker-happy right-handers with unusually deep repertoires. You know, not many guys, certainly not many right-handers who attack hitters like they do. If you see guys who are primary pitch sinker guys, you usually see sinker slider combo, right? That combo is as old as time. That's not how Stroman or Bassett operate. They've got the ridiculously deep assortment, changeups, cutters, slower breaking balls, particularly in Bassett's case. So I think, you know, there's a lot of similarities in terms of their profiles. But beyond that, I think vibe-wise too, at least in terms of what they bring on the field, like, they're dogs with extremely high compete levels and who consistently generate results that exceed the raw stuff. You know, you have faith in them when they're out there, and they're always out there. Stroman was a volume monster during his time in Toronto, and Bassett threw 200 innings last year. Neither of them are aces, to be sure, but they're the kind of mid-rotation starters, I think, that champions are made of, the kind that gives you a competitive start more often than not. And if you had to throw them out there for Game 7 of the World Series, you'd be like, hell yeah, let's go. And need I remind you, Marcus Stroman was on the mound for the 2016 wildcard game against Baltimore. He was on the mound for Game 5 of the 2015 ALDS against Texas. If Chris Bassett was towing the slab for those games, you'd be like, let's go, Hound, you got this. And I think people were similarly confident with Stroman. So look, I get that Stroman can be a bit of a goof sometimes, and his online presence can rub some people the wrong way. But look, when he was here, people loved him. people I think really respected the competitiveness that he brought, the energy that he brought. And I feel the same way about Chris Bassett. And, you know, it's not just energy and competitiveness, but you felt pretty confident when Strome was on the mound. I feel pretty confident when Bassett is on the mound, and you are now free to laugh at that comp if you wish.
I love that you compared a 6'5" guy to Marcus Stroman.
Sorry, are you under the belief that height measures heart? But I got news for you, buddy.
I love that. I love that comp. I had Midwest Hyunjin Ryu. What if Hyunjin Ryu was born in Ohio? Is what I have from
nice.
Just the like the it's all built around not smoke and mirrors, but like it's not about throwing as hard as you possibly can. It's about throwing whatever you want, whenever you want. And I just see that profile, that sinker and spin and keeping them guessing. And once you're in certain counts, there's just no telling. I sort of do get that. And you so perfectly put sort of the warm hug of Bassett. I got that same feeling from Ryu a lot of the time, where it was just like when he was here and he was very good in his first years, it was like almost watching Bob Ross. You're like just watching this guy calmly paint over 2 hours, and then he's like, okay, I'm done. And you're like, wow, that was really nice to experience. I get the same feeling from Bassett. It is a little more God, I use dog as an adjective here, but it's a little more dog forward in the aggressiveness, but I get that same sort of like mentally he's painting a bigger picture than pitch by pitch. He's painting a big scene, and then the game ends and he finally steps back and you go, oh, I was looking at the individual strokes. Nice. I step back. I now see like you threw 8 different pitches this game, and you have different locations for different things and different times. I think that's the vibe that I get.
Totally. Like the four-dimensional chess element. I love it. I'm just going to put a happy little change up just down here, just fading away.
2024 outlook, you talked a little bit when we talked about projections. What do you think 2024 looks like for Chris Bassett?
I hope it looks good, because the Blue Jays need him to be good. Like I mentioned earlier, this is a team that needs its starting pitching to be not just solid, but pretty good if they're going to compete for an American League East title. But there's no reason to believe that Chris Bassett won't be good. Again, I did mention that there's been some velocity decline, but he's not a guy who needs big time velocity to be effective, as we've said over and over. There's no reason to think that there's a big drop off in performance coming. And look, I mean, I think that's even more critical now for the Blue Jays, given that it looks like Alek Manoah, you know, who knows with Alek Manoah, it looks like Kevin Gausman won't be available to at least start the season in the rotation. We're getting pretty close, and he still hasn't thrown in a Grapefruit League game. Chris Bassett takes on even more significance in the context of those injuries. So they're really going to need him to produce, you know, a high volume of quality innings, much like he did last year. But I'm confident that he can do that again. Yes, he is 35, but I think it's important to note that for a 35-year-old, he hasn't even thrown 1,000 career innings. Like, there is not a ton of wear and tear on his arm, given how deep he is into his career. Like, he's only qualified for the ERA title twice, and that was in the last 2 seasons. But there's not a disconcerting amount of mileage, which I think augurs well as he heads into his age 35 season. But at the end of the day, they need Bassett to be good, and I expect that he will be.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I'm with you there. And Kevin Gausman hasn't pitched, has he?
No, he certainly hasn't.
It's probably fine.
I'm not too worried about it. What is it? Just a shoulder injury? Oh, I'm sure he'll sleep that off.
I get shoulder injuries all the time, and the next day I'm usually
probably
pretty fine. Bigger picture, we said it before, it all comes to an end at 2025. But I think, listen, if it's not working by 2025, then it's been nice knowing all these guys. We're gonna restart.
Yeah. Look, we had. We had the first inning of game one of the 2022 wild card series, you know?
Remember when they made the playoffs in 2020? Yeah, that was pretty sick.
Hey, that was a fun, 48 hours in St. Petersburg?
Coming home in 2021, that was emotional.
Yeah, I was at that game. Santiago Espinal made the barehanded catch to seal it. And we thought, you know, this team is going to win the World Series. And then they... They didn't make the playoffs.
And now here we are. It's 2024. Can you believe it?
I can't. Crazy. You know, time makes you bolder. Children get older. And suddenly we're two seasons away from this competitive window being closed. And that's a really scary thought. Look, when they brought in Chris Bassett, I think they thought that they would be competing for a World Series title last year, this year, next year. That remains to be seen. It hasn't happened yet, but that's through no fault of Chris Bassett's, who went above and beyond in his first season with the Blue Jays and who's going to play an integral role for them. Certainly this season, we'll see what happens. Who the heck knows what's going to happen in 2025? You know, if they're out of it by this year's trade deadline, maybe they're shopping Bo Bichette. Who knows? You know, if they're not extending him, maybe they're shopping him. A year and a half of Bo Bichette, that'll get you a big haul back. Not to be too defeatist, because I really do, in all seriousness, believe in this team. And I think that with a little more cluster luck, you know, they could have been a real contender for the World Series last year. I think that they can be, with a little more cluster luck, a real contender for the World Series this year. They're going to need some things to break their way. And Chris Bassett staying healthy and effective is a big part of that.
Beautifully put. I got to stop letting the big picture conversations go into we're all fucked in 2025. It's three or four episodes in a row I've done that. I've been like, you know.
Man, it's hard not to. Like, 2025 is not that far away. And you would think that we would have banked a single playoff victory in the Vlad Bo era by opening day 2024. Hasn't been the case. So everyone's a little sweaty. Everyone sees, everyone can hear the footsteps.
Absolutely.
You know, of a grim and dark future encroaching. And there you go. Your meltdown, pal.
We're back, baby.
Doing his thing.
Jonah, always so great to hear from you. You can find Jonah's work on The Score, the YouTube page, where this man's beautiful face out there talking about all kinds of stuff out there, constantly putting out great content, and find the tweets at Beer and Ball when the season comes alive. So does he. Jonah, thank you so much for finding the time tonight. I really appreciate it.